For many Americans, the situation around evolving LGBT rights couldn't be more clear. Of course, there are perspectives that couldn't be farther apart. It's about time versus the end is near. But both sides are solidly entrenched in their views. Many more Americans, however, do not fall easily into either of these categories. And for them, there are real concerns about the rapid changes they've seen in our laws and our society. A valiant attempt at addressing their concerns appeared in the Atlantic magazine under the headline, "Gay Rights May Come at the Cost of Religious Freedom." The writer is the magazine's managing editor, Emma Green, and I am very pleased to have her join me right now on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.
You know, your headline, "Gay Rights May Come at the Cost of Religious Freedom," is rather provocative. But reading your article in its entirety, it doesn't, to me, come across as particularly alarmist.
So the article I wrote is all about the legal landscape following the Supreme Court's decision on same-sex marriage. And I think there are two main points. The first is that there are a lot of questions that were raised by the ruling that we still don't know the answer to yet. So a lot of problems that have been raised that haven't been solved. And the second thing that really struck home to me is that there will probably be a lot of change happening soon on LGBT discrimination protections.
Mm-hmm.
But where those kinds of new laws get passed or new policies get put forth by federal agencies, it will come at a cost to, or at least raising questions for, religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
The two sort of are in tension with one another, where religious groups that want exemptions to certain statutes or guidelines on providing services to people who are in same-sex marriages, for example, will need to ask for exceptions. And so those two things are in tension with one another.
I am a longtime advocate for religious freedom, and my first instinct was to say, you know, I don't think it's going to be an exception to religious freedom. I think it's going to be an expansion of some people's understanding of religious freedom.
Well, I think we have been given situations which we haven't faced explicitly before, based on the Supreme Court's rulings. And that's for a couple of reasons. The first is that even though there were many cases in the country where gay people were allowed to get married before the Supreme Court's ruling, now that it's legal in the entire country, it will change the landscape of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, there were many states in the South where same-sex marriage was not legal before the ruling. There are also many states in the South that do not have laws that protect gay people against discrimination in hiring or discrimination in public accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
If those laws change, there's going to be tension there and new issues that get raised. And so, to your point, I think it will be a new challenge for thinking about what religious freedom actually means.
Mm-hmm.
What does it actually mean to violate an employer's conscience if they're being asked to, for example, provide services for a same-sex wedding ceremony or to provide spousal benefits to an employee who's part of a same-sex marriage?
Mm-hmm.
The other piece of context here that's new is that the Supreme Court had a decision last summer in the case on Hobby Lobby,
yes,
which was all about whether private business owners have to provide insurance coverage for certain types of birth control according to the new Obamacare Affordable Care Act. And the reason why this ruling is relevant is that the Supreme Court said that, yes, private business owners are capable of raising a religious freedom claim. That same type of logic may come to bear in these new cases that are raised by the same-sex marriage case.
Fundamentally, Emma, the debate often boils down to my rights versus your rights. But but isn't it really just as unprecedented to grant a business the right to a religious conscience, as in Hobby Lobby, as it is to allow a same-sex couple to marry?
Well, it's it's a really great point in that we're in a new time. It's a new way of thinking about employers' religious rights. Before this, there were obviously many cases that had arisen over time about religious freedom. Religious freedom is not a new thing in the United States. The United States is built on religious freedom and exceptions and trying to accommodate minorities. But you're exactly right that the way the Supreme Court imagined religious freedom claims in Hobby Lobby is much broader and more sweeping than it has been in previous rulings. So this is why it's sort of uncertain territory and will be new legal territory that needs to be explored post-same-sex marriage.
I'll be honest, a lot of the time opponents of LGBT rights destroy their own credibility with hyperbole and ad hominem attacks. While there's no way this issue gets resolved without compromises, we really do need to take the idea of curing gay people or pushing them back into the closet off the table once and for all. So what are the remaining alternatives as you see?
The point you raise is really interesting, and something that Doug Laycock, who is a professor at the University of Virginia and one of the country's leading experts on these legal issues, said to me, which I thought was really resonant, is that it's not really part of any religion to be hateful to gay people or to want to expressly discriminate against somebody because of who they are. And when we look at these cases where the two rights are in tension with one another, it is in a lot of cases of people expressly saying, you're gay, and I want to discriminate against you because you're gay. Most of the cases, the vast majority of them, are people who are raising concerns specifically with relation to marriage and their concept, mostly Christian concept, of what marriage is. So in terms of what happens next, I think it will be all about the compromise that you allude to, and some of it will be compromise on the side of envisioning broader accommodations and anti-discrimination protections for LGBT people when it comes to housing or hiring or firing or spousal benefits. But the other question will be, what will happen, for example, to individuals who raise claims about not wanting to participate in same-sex marriage ceremonies? Mm-hmm. What will happen to adoption agencies that are run by religious organizations that don't want to place children with gay couples? What will happen to religious universities that have sexual conduct policies and don't necessarily want to change those to accommodate students who might be involved in gay relationships? Those are going to be interesting edge cases. And, you know, right now the evidence shows that probably the religious freedom claims are not going to stand, but it's a question whether and how each side will have to make a compromise.
Emma, is there a model for balanced accommodation that you think makes sense here?
Well, it's an interesting question because some of this will come down to passing laws. So creating a law like the one that was recently passed in Utah, which was a great example of the kind of balance and compromise that might be feasible. So Utah is the most recent state, and it's the 22nd out of 50 states to pass wide-ranging protections against discrimination for LGBT people. But the way that it happened was that Utah legislators met with religious leaders and were able to carve out an exemption for religious organizations, for example, that didn't want to have to hire people who are not part of their faith or who didn't accord with a certain behavioral standard. And so that carve out for religious groups could be a model that other states, and particularly states that tend to have large religious populations, could follow. The other part of this will be about litigation. So people raising these cases, saying either I have a discrimination case or I have a case where I feel like my religious freedom is being violated. And then it will be up to the courts to decide and adjudicate what actually merits a full religious freedom claim? What actually merits a discrimination claim? Is there some sort of compromise in the middle of those claims?
That's a good point. I am amazed at how much confusion exists on both sides of this issue. A majority of Americans firmly believe that anti-gay discrimination in employment is already illegal nationwide, and you and I know that's not true. A number of initiatives promising to protect the rights of clergy and of churches that object to marriage equality are getting widespread support, but they're not needed because of constitutional protections that have been in place for a long time. Do you think there is a chance of us approaching all of this in a reality-based way at some point?
I think what you're asking for is a state of politics that does not exist. Your points are exactly right, which is that there is widespread misunderstanding about the current state of affairs. So a 2014 survey by the Public Religion Research Institute found that 75% of Americans believe that there were federal laws against discrimination against gays. And you're exactly right that that is dead wrong. 75% of Americans are wrong on that point. And to the point of the Pastor Protection Acts, I think a lot of that falls under political posturing, which is that you're exactly right, that pastors will in no circumstance be compelled to conduct weddings that they find to be against their conscience. Nor will rabbis, nor will imams, no religious leader can be compelled by the government to conduct a wedding that it finds objection to. But, you know, there's a sense in which this issue is being treated in the same way as every other political issue that's contentious, which is people use this to rally their base. They use this to raise fear. They use it to mischaracterize a side that they find to be their opponent. And, you know, I don't think there's anything that can stop that. That's part of how politics works. There's rhetoric and there's misinformation. But I think the best thing that can happen is on a community level, trying to open our hearts in terms of tolerance and understanding and really trying to live pluralistically. And then in terms of, you know, a public information standpoint for legislators or public leaders to try to spread the right information about what's actually going on and what we do know and what we don't know.
How hopeful are you that we will, as a society, eventually find a sustainable level of accommodation on these matters? Or is this somehow an unprecedented zero-sum game that our Constitution is somehow inadequate to solve?
Well, I think from a legal perspective, I think it's a matter of time, which is these cases will be raised, and it's almost impossible to tell how they'll fall out. You know, there are so many different areas in which these two kinds of claims have to be adjudicated. And, you know, the Supreme Court last summer with Hobby Lobby handed down a surprise decision. There were a lot of people on the left in particular who were very, very surprised by the way the court ruled. So it's a little difficult to predict exactly what's going to happen. I will say that I feel confident that there will be changes and there will be movement. And one indication of that is that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission issued a ruling within the last couple of weeks that basically said they think existing law already protects LGBT people from workplace discrimination. This is a new interpretation, and it's one that doesn't have the exact force of legislation, nor does it have the same kind of force as a Supreme Court decision might. But it is a federal agency that a lot of legislators really respect and a lot of courts give deference to. So that's one piece of movement that says to me there's going to be big change coming on this in the coming months and years, and already there are certain federal agencies, for example, that are staking out positions on it. We'll see what kinds of discrimination claims and religious freedom claims arise in the wake of that.
Emma Green is the managing editor at The Atlantic Magazine. Her comprehensive article titled Gay Rights May Come at the Cost of Religious Freedom appeared there last week. Emma, I want to thank you for sharing your great perspectives so articulately with us on State of Belief Radio, and I hope that we can come back and visit with each other again as we see these changes beginning to unfold even more clearly.
Well, I would love that, and I'm so grateful for you having me on your show.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. I told you up front that we were dealing with serious matters and we would treat them seriously. I hope you think we have done that, and I hope the show was meaningful for you. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to thank you, very sincerely thank you. The ongoing financial support of our listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. If you find value in what you're hearing, and if you think it's important that more people hear what you are hearing, I urge you To join our other generous supporters today, please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast and find links mentioned during the show. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and share the stories you find compelling with your friends. We really need you to help spread the word. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today of Interfaith Alliance. Go to interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.